The use of child labor in the global cocoa industry is a complicated issue, one that was explored by University of Arkansas professors in an article published in the Public Library of Science Journal. Their research specifically looks at Ghana, where recent statistics indicate there are more than 800,000 children involved in producing cocoa. And even though the cocoa industry was valued at about $85 billion last year, most cocoa farming families live below the World Bank poverty line of $2 a day. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Associate Professor Jeff Luxted, an agricultural economist, about one theoretical solution to the problem.
If you do like eating chocolate, what are the odds that the cocoa used to make it involved child labor?
So probably if you're eating something from one of the major chocolate producers, there's probably a decent chance that it's coming from some form of child labor at some point. Tracing back to the farm, like, you know, this bundle of cocoa beans came from this farmer is very difficult, and that's one of the traceability issues.
So your study specifically looks at child labor in the cocoa industry in Ghana. Can you tell us why farmers depend on child labor in that country?
Yeah, so Ghana has about 20%, maybe 20-25% of the world cocoa exports. So they're a fairly large exporting country, and most of the production in Ghana occurs with small farm households. So they produce cocoa as a cash crop. So they don't consume very much cocoa in Ghana, and it's mostly exported. So they're just doing it to come up with money. And it's very expensive to hire people to come work on the farms with you. So you have, you know, each household has a certain amount of hours available between the parents and the children. So they just, you know, have to get the work done, and the children are there and available. So that's kind of how they get roped into it. Obviously, the children would be better off in school, and that's what the parents would prefer. But, you know, we're dealing with, you know, people with kind of extreme poverty, and they don't have many other options.
And what kind of labor are these children doing?
Yeah, so the issue comes when children are doing lots of labor or they're doing hazardous labor. So hazardous labor is like wielding a machete, clearing fields, breaking cocoa pods, that type of stuff, maybe spraying pesticides. And then, if I can remember the numbers, so 14 to 17 is considered kind of this first category, and they're not allowed to work more than 42 hours a week. Anything over that would be considered hazardous. I think like 12 to 14 is kind of the notch below that, and they're not allowed to work more than like 14 hours a week or do hazardous work.
So your study does present a solution to this problem. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the idea behind the study is that if you're going to ask farmers to not use children to do this labor, it's going to cost them more money, or they're going to not produce as much, so it's going to make them worse off. So it's basically pushing them further into poverty if they don't have some compensation form. So we developed a model where we could kind of hold utility constant and then provide a price premium as they reduce child labor. And in the utility, we include, you know, consumption of food, non-food, leisure of both adults and children, and then also education. So it's kind of an altruistic model where parents are, or the household is better off if the children are in school, but because of the poverty issue, they're not able to. So if the kids spend more time in school, the household is made better off as a whole. If we're thinking about development in the long run, getting these kids out of cocoa production and into education is a really important aspect of that. And I think most of the parents probably that are having the kids do the work see that, but, you know, again, they run up into this poverty issue.
So who would be paying for that premium? Where would that money come from?
Well, I think our thought would be it would be consumers would pay for it.
And is that something consumers would be willing to do?
The current study doesn't speak to what consumers are willing to do, but we are doing a follow-up study where we're actually estimating consumers' willingness to pay for child labor-free cocoa.
So other than that unknown, what other challenges do you foresee to this proposal to pay farmers premiums in order to end child labor?
Yeah, probably the enforcement aspect is the biggest challenge. And they've been working on enforcing child labor laws for a while now. And the issues are, you know, if you really enforce these, you're pushing these farmers further into poverty. So, and then there's the other issue is there's thousands and thousands of cocoa farmers. They're all very small households doing this. So how do you monitor thousands of cocoa farmers and make sure that they're all doing are reducing the child labor that you want them to.
As a consumer right now, is there any way you can go about finding chocolate that is not produced using any kind of child labor?
There are regions in the world that produce cocoa without child labor. So you could figure out which regions are not using child labor and find the type of cocoa products that are coming from that. They're probably more specialty items. I believe I saw a cocoa in the store that was called slavery-free cocoa, and I don't exactly know what that means. It's very anecdotal. I saw it in the grocery store, but you know, so they are trying to differentiate their products, and there are regions of the world that produce cocoa without child labor. But most of the cocoa coming out of West Africa is for mass production, so okay. For the big cocoa companies. But you can definitely find specialty chocolate that is probably produced a little bit more or produced without child labor.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
That was University of Arkansas Associate Professor Jeff Luckstead speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. They were discussing an article published in the journal Public Library of Science. Other authors include another University of Arkansas professor, Lanier Nally, and Francis Sisbo of Kansas State University.